Hi everybody and welcome to the Synapticast. I'm your host, Scott C., and like a game show contestant with a parting gift, I could not believe my eyes. Folks, I sound a little off this morning, and that's because I'm recording this actually just before we put this up. I'm recording it live at the Sundress Academy for the Heart's home base in Firefly Farms, and I am still having I'm only on my second cup of coffee this morning. That's not good. There's a long way to go. Folks, before we get to today's interview, today's guest, today's episode, let me tell you a little bit about some upcoming important stuff from the Sundress Academy for the Arts, Sundress Publications, etc. As always, a little bit of news for you. June 28th, what are you doing? Because whatever you're doing is not nearly as good as what I'm about to tell you you should do. That's right, I'm telling you, you should do this. I'm not saying you could, you should. June 28th at 7:30 p.m. at the Tennessee Valley Unitarian Universalist Church in Knoxville. You want to check this out. It is the debut of Outspoken. Outspoken, of course, I've talked about this on the program before. I want to mention it again to you. This is a great initiative put forth by SAFTA and by Sundress Publications, giving voice to LGBTQ youth and others in the South. So what is Outspoken on June 28th? It is a theatrical review written and performed by local LGBTQ community members and their allies, and there are some great readers reading these pieces. Some of them are being read by the authors. Some are being read by other people. It is going to be fantastic, though. And there's great variety of entertainment that's going to be going on that night. June 28th, 7:30 p.m., Tennessee Valley Unitarian Universalist Church. Tickets are $10 online, and you can get those at sundresspublications.com/outspoken. You can get also more information about it, but that's where the tickets are, $10 online or $15 at the door. And note that a percentage of the ticket sales will go to the East Tennessee chapter of GLSEN, the Gay, Lesbian, and Straight Education Network. It is a worthy cause, worthy charity. You should check this out. It is going to be fantastic. A week before that, well, 6 days before it, 3 p.m. on June 22nd, the Sundress Reading Series continues once or twice a month, and I always got to talk about it. This time up, the readers are going to be two Sundress authors, Marcel Browers and his great poetry. I've met the guy numerous times. See, it's early. I'm still on that second cup of coffee. Marcel Browers, reading his poetry, as well as Sundress author extraordinaire T.A. Noonan will be there as well, and it is going to be a fantastic reading, folks. If you are within the Knoxville area, the city limits, or beyond, come and check it out on June 22nd. That is this coming Sunday at 3 p.m. at the Birdhouse. Of course, the reading series is always free, so all you have to do is just show up, and you'll experience awesome poetry. The last one with, you know, the lineup we had, if you check the last episode, you'll know about it. It was fantastic. I got the chance to attend. Speaking of the reading series, back in May, we had a couple guests come through, Leanne Hornfelt and Chris McCurry. And the reason I bring them up is they just happen to be today's guests. It's a double guest episode. We recorded this live exactly 1 or 2 hours before they participated in the Sundress Reading Series. They came into town, we had a little soiree for them, and then I asked them, hey, would you come over to the farm on Sunday, and we'll record an episode of the SAFTAcast, and they were game for it, and it was awesome. It turned out to be a really good interview, as you'll soon see, or hear, rather. Recorded this live at the kitchen table. If you want proof of that, then check out our Twitter, the SAFTAcast Twitter, at SAFTAcast, for the selfie that we took during the podcast of us, you know, proof. Because, you know, you can say anything you want on the internet, but as the kids like to say, pics or it didn't happen. So check that out. And, of course, you can check out our SAFTAcast Twitter for all information about the show and much, much more. With that said, I will shut up and leave you to it. Let's take it away with the theme song. The farm, people are going to be wandering anyway. So as we do this, then the only thing is, because this is all live mic, we got a lot of interference, is that when you speak, get a little closer on it and everything. So anyway, you guys liking the farm so far?
Yeah,
it's good.
I love it. It's amazing.
So here we are, Firefly. We've been recording for the last 10 minutes, by the way.
Great.
So we are live. So it's great to have you guys here.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Yeah, it's been fun.
Here from Lexington. Are both of you from Lexington?
Close enough, yeah.
Yeah, I'm from Lexington, but...
I'm in Georgetown, which is like 15 minutes away.
Are you guys native to Kentucky, or...?
I am
as well. Yeah.
Okay.
Born and raised
in Lexington?
Right outside a little city outside of it, 15 miles or so. So pretty much drove into Lexington almost every weekend.
So that makes sense, then.
Yeah,
totally. Same with you. Georgetown, just never left?
Well, I was born in Lexington, lived there until I was about 12, and then we moved to a surrounding county. But Lexington is like, that's our metropolis. It's the little hub. So all the surrounding counties, you pretty much are in Lexington if you need anything. But we moved to Georgetown for my husband's job. We really love it there. It's a smaller town, but it's about 15 minutes from downtown Lexington, so we can go out to readings and events and things like that, but then we can come back to kind of our little Mayberry area when we want.
Does Lexington have much of an art scene?
It's actually pretty hopping down there, yeah.
There's gallery hops every month.
What's a gallery hop?
A gallery hop?
It's like a First Friday type of thing where you go to various galleries.
Exactly, yes. View art. And then usually there's poetry readings that line up. There's a lot of theater troupes. We've got 3 or 4 universities of varying sizes and purposes in the city. So, yeah.
There's also like a big, we're getting a lot of breweries and craft beer. You know,
I wouldn't expect them to be like a hub of craft brews.
Yeah, well, it's kind of a thing. I mean, you think of Kentucky, you think of bourbon, probably.
And horses.
Uh-huh. And so now there's like a beer scene going on. So they have, you know, like lots of new food. And there's one of our favorite places is West 6th. And it's attached to, it's got a seafood restaurant where it's like, I don't know, they self-contain... How do you describe it?
They
have a hatchery?
Box?
The Smithtown Seafood, don't they have their own tanks there?
Oh, yeah, I don't know. I've actually never been there.
And then, like, the brewery has a beer with honey in it. I can't think of what it's called now, but they use honey from a local apiary.
Huh.
That's, like, right down the street. So, yeah, it's a really neat little
it's like,
place.
You know, bourbon for my man, beer for my horses, almost here, coming in there. I wouldn't expect this from Kentucky, honestly. I've been there a few times. I have family in Russellville, which is right on the border, practically.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, I remember it being a very small town kind of mentality and kind of dull.
Mm-hmm.
Hate to say it, you know. I got nothing against Kentucky. But,
well, yeah. It's really grown, and there is a big art scene, literary, visual, music. I mean, it's a really cool place to be right now.
It's like
now.
Becoming a hipster place, almost.
It's not necessarily hipster, I don't think.
I mean, like I said, lots of universities, so, but no, I think there's a mature crowd that, just likes art, likes supporting art, and, of all types, and a community that's supportive of each other, so it's like a perfect storm for creative individuals.
As I understand, that's kind of what Knoxville has become a little bit, too, is that you've got a lot of art going on here, and First Friday type events, gallery hopping, that type of thing and everything. Of course, I'm not from here, so I can't speak to that. I'm from a cultural dead zone in South Florida.
Nothing?
No.
Nothing?
No, there are no poetry readings, no nothing.
That's terrible.
I know. The closest I have to go to Boca or Miami, and I am not going to go to Miami.
What do they do on Friday nights?
I really don't know.
What do you do on Friday nights?
I sit down with Netflix.
Oh.
Sounds like a good time.
Indeed it is. It's not like the farm here. You know, saw something happening here.
Yeah.
So, what's on your mind, guys? What's going on these days? You know, is this your first trip to Knoxville?
Yeah, driving through just on the way, you know,
somewhere
elsewhere.
Else.
Right, never stopped and visited, so it's really cool. I mean, everything has been wonderful. Had so much fun last night visiting and talking. You get to know everybody.
I'll tell you, SAP to throw us a good reception.
Yeah, it's been warm.
Warm, to say the least.
Yeah.
Warm and
thrown
warm.
Right in.
Hey, exactly. Nice, you're tossed right into the mix, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And the farm is awesome. I'm in love with the donkey.
Who isn't? Now, the woman who played Kaylee is coming on Firefly is coming here to Knoxville. And there's rumors that we're trying to get her out here to be with Jane.
Oh, cool.
I don't remember which one is Kaylee on the show.
She's the mechanic, the cute one.
Okay.
That's always, you know, desiring sex and never gets it.
I got you.
And wants the doctor, Simon.
I got you.
So, is this your first time down here?
Absolutely, yeah. First time.
Was this like a way station for you as well?
No, actually, passing through. I can't say. Maybe we did pass through on our way to Asheville 2 summers ago for on our way to school. But yeah, but other than that, first time in, maybe second time passing through. Yeah.
Ever been to places like Nashville or Memphis down here?
No,
just never.
Is that pitiful?
Not really. It's not pitiful.
Yeah, I've been to Nashville and Memphis. I think I went to Memphis once with a girlfriend of mine a while back. And then Nashville, actually, I've been to a few times because they host some pretty nerdy events there, like Pokemon tournaments and Magic the Gathering tournaments. And
are you big into the CCGs?
Yeah, I used to be in my college days.
Cardboard crack.
Yeah, cardboard crack is what it's called. But no, not so much anymore. I still play with some of my older friends when we're sitting around the table. But
do you keep up with the modern decks or anything?
Not the modern ones. That's way too pricey. We're talking every 3 months, you've got to spend $700 just to stay current. So.
Jeez,
no, it's I've moved on from that pastime era.
Yeah, when I quit, it was like $70 for a display box or so. Mm. I can't play anymore. All my decks are banned.
Yeah,
I found out every card I love is banned.
So you used to play?
I used to play heavy.
Oh, nice.
Quite a bit, actually. I stopped right around the start of the Urza saga. That dates me right there.
That does. And you still have all those cards?
I do. I've actually been trying to unload them.
You should.
Except I want to keep a couple decks and my binder of special rares.
What's in the special rare binder?
Not much. It's like, okay, here's 4 Sarah Angels, because I love the Sarah Angel.
Okay.
I'm going to... The last card I will get rid of is my Time Warp, because I was in Rocky Horror. I will not give up my Time Warp. I traded a friend out the ass to get that card. It was like $20 of cards, like, here!
Sure.
Because we had the old wizard guides, and you'd have the price list, and be like, I'm trading you like $30 worth of my cards for that one $9 card.
I have some bad news for you.
Hmm.
They downgraded Sarah Angel to a uncommon.
Oh, recently. She's probably, what, 10 cents now?
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Yay!
But if they're from Alpha or Beta...
No,
or,
no.
Okay.
Yeah. No.
Well, not to exclude Leanne, but how Leanne and I actually met for the first
time... Actually, that's a good question. How'd you guys come together here?
She posted on Facebook that her son had wanted some Magic the Gathering cards for
Christmas.
And I just happened to have like a bunch laying around that I wasn't using. So I was
want 2 more boxes worth?
Yeah,
absolutely.
Pretty much. He hooked us up. It was a good Christmas at the Hornfell house.
So you guys met like through Facebook then and everything? And...
Yeah, well, in the literary scene, you know, I had known about Leanne from Holler, reading at Holler and stuff like that, her reading.
Yeah, the literary world's a bit incestuous. You start hearing names, and eventually...
Yeah.
You're lined up. You're friends on Facebook.
Facebook helps a lot. Like, you hear these names over and over, and it's, you know, you can kind of creep them and lurk them on Facebook, which is nice, because you might not have the opportunity, especially if you don't get out to, like, AWP or something.
Right.
When else are you going to meet these people?
And you can be us, and you'll be like, I'm not creepy stalking you. I love your work, and I just want to see what your latest release is going to be, blah,
exactly.
blah. You can BS it. Yeah. It's perfect.
Well, and I like Facebook because for a long time I was interested in following journals because I wanted to see, you know, who's reading, where can I submit, what, you know, what's going on. But then as I found poets whose work I admired, now I'm in this kick where I friend request pretty much anybody that I admire or whose work I come in contact with because I feel like there's always something for me to learn from them. And so that's a great way, you know, to maybe get inside their mind a little bit, learn about how they write or what they're interested
whatever
in,
it may be,
be exposed to new work. And they always know, you know, 100 people that I don't know. And so even more...
The chain. I know how that is, because with SAFTA and everything, it's like, okay, I keep seeing a certain name pop up all the time as commenting on stuff. And it's like, then I come here and it's like, hi, I'm so-and-so. It's like, I know you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know what you're up to. Thank you.
Yeah.
So, I totally understand. Facebook changed everything for us as writers.
Yeah.
Changed everything. Fuck MySpace. Didn't do shit for anybody.
No.
And you can swear on this cast. I don't care.
Oh, sweet.
Exactly. Don't limit yourself. So does your son still play Magic the Gathering?
Yeah, he plays. And my I have three boys, so my oldest is into magic. The middle son is getting into Pokemon. And then I have a five-year-old who's just a bruiser and runs through the house and people up, and you know, he's not really into anything yet except that.
Except beating people up.
Yeah.
It's the martial arts.
Yeah.
Yeah, get him to MMA.
Yeah.
Well, so now you can get rid of your Pokemon cards.
Actually, I didn't play the Pokemon card game. I played the Pokemon game on the Game Boy. On
the card, the trading card game on there?
No, the actual, like, what was it?
Red, blue.
Red, blue, emerald, diamond, pearl,
XY,
black, white. Yeah, and there's a competitive community for that as well.
There is definitely. I always thought that the Pokemon trading card game was the best card game adaptation made, because they've tried to do Magic multiple times, and every time it doesn't work right. Mm-hmm. In my opinion, it's like, just give us all the cards and let us build our own decks and fantasies,
right?
So
yeah.
But if you want to get rid of your Pokemon stuff, now you have a buyer for it.
There you go.
That's true.
Now, I'm assuming, Leanne, you never got into that kind of stuff.
No.
Card games in general, like poker?
Spades, spoons, you know?
Oh, spoons is a great game.
we should play some spoons.
Let's do it.
I've never understood it. Explain to me the rules of it. Because I know there's spoons on the table and there are cards. That's it.
Yeah.
It's been a long time since I've played, so you have to, you pass them around.
Yeah, right? Everyone starts with three cards in their hand, and there's a person with the starting deck, and they get the first look, so they're kind of the most privileged position, but you don't know what the other people have in their hands already. First person to get three of the same card snags a spoon from the middle, and there's one fewer spoon than there are people in the around the table.
Okay.
So if you're the last one to grab a spoon, and as soon as someone grabs a spoon, anyone can grab a spoon. If you're the last one and you have no spoon, you're out of the round, and it keeps shrinking until there's only one person left. And so there's a speed aspect to it. So you're taking a card, and then it's kind of like a physical game mixed with, you know, you're trying to, I don't know, decide whether or not you can, if you have. If you get a second card of, like, you get two nines, for instance, but you know earlier you already passed a nine, you know, in all this deck there's only one more nine, and someone else might have the nine, so you're going to have to ship that too. And
So there's a little bit of strategy involved.
Oh, yeah, there's always strategy.
It seems like a game that was developed when people were drunk.
Probably.
It really does. One of those games.
Maybe not, or it would have been shot glasses instead of spoons.
I wonder if you could get shots. You know, instead of spoons, just line up in row of shots.
We just developed a new game.
It's amazing.
Any game can be made into a drinking game. That's the point.
This is true.
A friend of mine had this great idea. You take GoldenEye, the video game. And the idea was, every time you kill somebody, you take the drink. So the good players get bad, the bad players get good. And then, once everybody's completely drunk, you switch over to Tetris. I always wondered what drunk Tetris would be like.
It would be like me trying to cram stuff into my fridge at a dinner party.
Before or after the wine is served?
After.
So, you got enjoying the farm and everything. You grew up with animals, didn't you?
Well, not like dogs and cats.
Dogs and cats. What about
hamsters?
We lived on the edge of this, on the edge of these woods, and so the animals we grew up with were like crawdads and like grasshoppers, and you know,
those don't really count as animals.
But like raising of, we would try to like get hamsters and stuff, or like tadpoles. They all died. Everything died always. We'd create these, stage these death matches.
Great lessons for children.
Yeah, they all die. And so, you know, we had a pet turtle at one point, and he died, but not before killing the biggest crawdad we could find. And
he died.
He definitely died. He was dismembered in a cage match. But you know, no, not real animals.
It's like Christmas. You know, it was worst Christmas, best Christmas over here. Worst Christmas over here. Son, your pet turtle died, but not before he killed the crawdad.
A big one.
Because of family, you know, the family motto, and he died.
Mm-hmm.
For all animals. You grew up with dogs and cats.
Well, yeah, dogs and cats.
Those count as animals.
They count. And now we've got a dog and three cats, and it's kind of funny you mentioned a turtle, because my middle son wants a turtle for his birthday in a couple
weeks.
They
smell bad.
Really?
They do.
Damn.
But they're kind of actually pretty boring animals. I mean, They got one trick, and that's like go in the shell. And to do that, you kind of have to torture them, right? It's like poke, poke, poke. Are you going to go in your shell? Okay.
Cool. You can retract limbs.
Yeah.
Do that again. And then they take a long time coming back out.
Right.
So what did they eat? What did you feed yours? Stuff you found outside?
No, I think they eat, if I remember correctly, they eat vegetables, but they also might eat crickets.
Oh, damn.
Yeah, so then you gotta go buy
and crawdads.
And they
yeah.
And well, yeah, they'll battle a crawdad. Yeah, depending on the type you get. I suppose snapping turtles probably mainly eat crawdads. I don't know. You probably won't get your son a snapping turtle.
Yeah.
But
what type of turtle do you get a child?
Box turtle. Yeah, they're like
tame.
You know, yeah, they're tame. They're probably two or three iPhones, since that's what I'm looking at right in front of me. Wide or big, and then they're, you know, eat lettuce.
Pretty docile.
Yeah,
creatures.
I mean, and they don't move very quickly, obviously, so they're not getting away. So.
It's like, where's the turtle?
He's
there. Oh, there he is. Yeah. Like 3 days later. Yep, he's still there.
He's still
just moving. He's not dead yet, but he's moving.
Yeah, I think this is going to be one of those gifts that are really cool for about a week. And
yeah,
then
exactly.
I'm going to be stuck taking care of the turtle.
Yeah.
With no real, it's not like you're going to pick it up and be like, oh, I'm going to pet you, shell now. Or tickle that little soft underpart that's still kind of leathery.
Yeah.
It's not going to be too much excitement for the
turtle. Just kind of sit on a rock.
Yeah.
And it's going to live forever.
Yeah.
Turtles live a long time. That's why you should get a hamster.
Get a sugar glider.
I have a friend who has a sugar glider.
Really?
Is
it trained to go in their pockets?
I don't know if it's trained, but yeah, it likes to burrow and be in little warm enclosed spaces. And yeah,
maybe
it's
I'm just
super
old,
cute.
Maybe I'm just old fashioned, but for me, pets were either dog, cat, or hamster. Or possibly
guinea pig.
I count them as hamsters.
Yeah,
they're
in
the same category in my eyes.
Rodents.
Pets, rodent pet. Now it's like people have ferrets, people have rats, people have...
I had ferrets. Yeah, I forgot about them.
They were assholes. Yeah, they suck too.
They smell like
they smell like shit.
Yeah.
They smell horrible.
And they bite. Ours would.
Yeah.
They were Simon and Garfunkel.
I don't remember ours, the name of ours.
I always see them like being led around by hippies that just smell like patchouli oil.
Patchouli and ferret.
Yeah, and they're just like, hey, let me show you devil sticks, man. No, that's okay, please. That's okay. I got it. You know, fine. Thaw out. Go away. And my ferret, man, he runs all over my shoulder. I don't care. So you got ferrets now, you got sugar gliders, you got all these exotic pets. Snakes. Yeah, they were kind of around when I was a kid, but.
Yeah.
We had birds, too, which I love.
Birds
are like one of my favorite things, but I was cleaning the cages and had this horrible allergy attack, like couldn't breathe type thing. And we found out that I am allergic to bird dander and duty. So I couldn't keep birds anymore.
Interesting.
Bird dander and duty.
I've never heard anyone ever of, you know, like allergic to bird dander.
Yeah.
You know, birds had dander.
Yeah.
Just their feathers.
So no birds, which is really, it's like the, you know, the cosmic joke. Because that's
all
the one
birds?
Thing that I would like to have.
All
yeah.
birds?
Well, you just whatever birds you could buy at a pet store, like parakeets and what are they called? Cockatiels? Is that what
cockatiels?
Yeah.
Macaws, if you get a parrot.
That would be awesome. Yeah, but I can't have them. So I bird watch, though.
Okay.
We live in an area with a lot of trees behind our house.
Hmm.
And I put out feeders, so we get all kinds of
exotic birds?
Visitors. Well, I mean, not necessarily exotic, but I have seen... I had a book I kept track. Mm. I had seen like 30 different species or whatever of birds. I really want to see an eastern bluebird. But I haven't, which is...
Where would you have to go to see one of those?
Well, supposedly... I mean, I have a friend who, at her job, they have a bluebird who kind of hangs out in the parking lot. But I've heard that they're sort of hard to... spot, like they like to live in a certain type of tree line and they eat mealworms. I even bought like these nasty ass bag of dried mealworms and put it out to try to, you know,
entice it,
and nothing. So I don't know. I think you're either lucky or you aren't.
Why bird watching? That's an interesting hobby.
I don't know. I just think that they're cool. Huh. And I like, it's interesting to try to, if you hear a bird, try to match up. You know, because birds, usually you'll hear them before you see them. And so it's kind of fun to listen for all the different calls and learn what those calls mean and figure out what type of bird you've heard. Mm-hmm. And I like to try to talk to mourning doves. They have a very distinct...
Yeah, they do. Yep.
Yeah.
I know mourning doves.
So you can actually have a conversation with a mourning dove. It's kind of cool. Yeah.
I never thought of that. I just listened to them because they're there. I know. I've always been curious by bird watchers because it's like it seems like a kind of a silly hobby in a way.
Yeah.
It's like, here, I'm going to sit down with this pair, you know, these binoculars and this book. And when I see one, I'm going to write down that I saw it. And that's it.
It's kind of like Pokemon, right? You've got to catch them all.
It's all about collecting that.
Yeah.
It's all about collecting the names.
And seeing. Yeah. And it's like, well, you know, now I've seen a Baltimore Oriole. And it was super cool, and I want to see it again. And that's not one that's real common. I mean, of course, you have the ones, like the common cards. I assume. And you always get those same ones, but then when you get that one special one, it's like, this is so neat.
I saw a red-winged blackbird finally.
Yeah.
Well, they're fairly common, though. I've seen those. I'm curious about bird watching, because, again, it seems like such a pointless thing, but then so many hobbies do.
Yeah.
Well, that's true.
That might be the other definition of hobbies, as viewed by other people. A
pointless thing.
The pointless thing
that gives you joy.
Yeah. the pointless thing that person does that gives them joy.
That is Hobby Lobby's new logo, I think. There should be the pointless things that give you joy.
That's great.
I don't know if I have any really interesting hobbies anymore. I think I've lost them all as time goes on. Because, like, work and life get in the way of hobbies.
Mm-hmm.
Takes a lot amount of energy to maintain a serious hobby and money.
Mm-hmm.
It takes money.
Yeah.
I mean, for instance, you could probably go to an aviary and see lots of the different birds you haven't seen.
Or you could buy all the different types of feeders. And I mean, like, to buy the mealworms for the bluebird was expensive. Or you could buy all these special binoculars. Or you can go on bluebird walks and, you know.
Yes.
Mm.
You can dump a lot of money into it.
Collecting is addicting.
You can be, yes. Yeah. We're just talking about cardboard crack. I know that pain.
Yeah.
Like, here's $30 of my stuff. Give me one.
Yes. Exactly.
Yes, my precious.
Exactly.
Exactly. My precious. It's mine. I can't do a Gollum impression. Wouldn't even try.
It's one of the harder ones to do.
Adam Savage, though, can do one perfectly on Mythbusters. There's a great clip on YouTube of him doing Gollum singing the disco song I Will Survive. And it is just fantastic.
I'm going to now have something to watch in the car on the drive
home,
back.
Yes,
he does a very good
tattoos.
He does a very good Gollum impression. Horrible tattoos.
That's what we were looking at on the way down. We were looking at Google images of terrible tattoos on human bodies.
Like what? What were some of the worst ones you saw?
Oh, the worst one by far was chest piece. Well, above the breast, so on the collarbone line, that said, "What would Jesus do?" And then underneath it was a kind of like comic book esque human centipede rendering. Yes.
Oh my god.
That was by far the worst and most disturbing tattoo. And there were other ones that were just like some guy on his moobs had tattooed his kids' images, and then like images of family members gone awry to look like, you know, like dogs or other things that the human being actually would never have looked like. My wife would remember some of the more excellent ones, but she's out of the room right now. But, you know, there was a couple that there would be, like, one girl had tattooed cock and balls on each side of her legs, just under where, like, a pair of, like, shorts would be, and then another woman had tattooed the same thing between and around her breasts, and you're just like,
why would you do this?
Yeah, lots of fascinating tattoos.
What are some of the best tattoos you've ever seen? Because both of you have tattoos. What are some of the best you've ever seen? I'm curious.
Well, I like the bird tattoos. I'm a big sucker for bird, like especially big, dedicated like back pieces.
Ooh.
You know?
Interesting.
I feel like I've got some, but they're smaller. So when I see someone who has a huge piece, it's like that was a commitment. And
it takes effort.
Yeah, and I really like that.
Now, what about the lower back tattoo?
I've got one there.
Oh, boy. Is it a bird or a butterfly?
It's a phoenix.
Okay, phoenix. Okay, it's a cross, you know, crossway.
I think that's kind of funny. It's like tattoos, where you have them kind of dates you.
In a way, yeah.
It's like, for a long time, it was on the back of the shoulder, or then it was
the bicep, the barbed wire on the bicep.
Right. So a lot of times you can look at someone's tattoos and kind of, you can kind of gauge maybe how long they've had that. Like a big one, I've got one on my foot. That's a big place right now. So in 20 years, people will probably look back and
the
say,
the ankle tattoo.
There you go.
We both have one on our forearm. On our forearm.
That's becoming a hip place, too. I've talked about that. If I ever get a tattoo, it's going to be on my forearm.
Right.
Yeah. You don't have any?
No, I don't have any yet. My wife has a couple. She wants more. I want possibly one. I'm still on the fence.
Right.
Going to get on the shoulder, but I'm so thin that my wife was like, she knows her tattooing and piercing. She's like, no, that would be a bad place for you. The place you should get it is on your forearm, right at the crux of the elbow.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, okay, I trust you. You know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
So what are you thinking about getting?
You know, if you might remember these. Maybe you will as well, Chris. Back in the day when you used to have 45 records,
mm-hmm.
and you used to put them on a turntable, but to make them fit the 33 and a thirds, you used to have what was called the spider. It was a three-prong yellow disc that was made by RCA, and they trademarked the spider name on it, and that's what I would get, but at a certain positioning so that the three holes and prongs line up to create a on my body, it would be facing left, triangle, which is the universal symbol for plight.
For what?
Plight.
Oh,
as in, a reporter, because of my obsession with music. I wouldn't get a band tattoo because, okay, I love the Beatles. Loved them when I was a teenager. Fell back in love with them when I got to my 30s. But there's no guarantee when I'm 60, I'm going to be going, I still love the Beatles.
Yeah,
So I don't believe in getting ones that are not permanent passion.
Right.
So I think the coolest tattoo I have ever seen was, if you've ever seen Die Hard, the ending of the movie where he has the Beretta on his shoulder, between his shoulder blades with the Christmas tape over it, someone had the gun and the tape all done right in that same spot.
Oh my god!
I'm like, that is good.
That's awesome.
Yeah. I guess more so than like what's on them, it's how they wear them. Like, if you can tell, I don't know, like that it means something to them readily, and they're wearing it with pride. Then, oh my gosh, I've seen the worst tattoo ever.
Bring it in
real life.
Oh, bring it.
I can't believe I had forgotten about this during the conversation. We were at We went to the Louisville Zoo like 2 weekends ago with my daughter. It was her first time at the zoo. And the most fascinating thing for the adults was this woman and her tattoo.
And she was behind the cage.
She was not. It was like one of those weird instances where you go to an amusement park and you run into the same person and the same group of people the time.
Okay.
Even when you leave them behind, they suddenly show up after you, or you show up to where they are, like, somehow. So we kept running into this lady. And it was unbelievable, this tattoo. And I'm just going to describe it now to get the suspense over with. A full portrait, full body portrait of a man. And this man was kind of muscular. He was also completely naked. And it was on her bicep, shoulder down, her bicep towards her elbow. And he was posed in such a way that covered his junk.
Okay.
But he was covering his junk with a ping pong ball paddle. A paddle.
Okay.
So it was kind of like, you know, he was kind of like leg spread situation, but there was a ping pong paddle, and then in his hand, kind of like showing it off, was a Coca-Cola. And then from his lips was a cigarette. And it was a full body portrait, and quite possibly the worst tattoo I've ever seen in my life.
I almost want to find that person and ask them about the significance of it.
We were tempted to, but because we had looked at it so much, it became kind of like this antagonistic, like, they knew we were looking, and by everyone in the group had to take a pass and take a look for it to be believed.
It became the birthmark of Nathaniel Hawthorne.
Right,
you
exactly.
You didn't take a sneak picture?
You know, I tried to get Abra like, oh, let's go look at the gorilla from this angle so I could, like, snag a picture of it, but it just wasn't going to happen, and she was actually with this kind of burly guy, and I'm not the biggest of guys, so I didn't want to. It was not him. The gentleman tattooed forever on her body was much skinnier than the
and much more well built.
Right. So maybe it was the idyllic version of him in his youth, in his ping pong championship days. fond memory. Perhaps.
I will never forget when I first met you and you were naked with that ping pong paddle and that
and
Coke
your Coca-Cola.
And that
and you were Atlanta.
Oh, that was that's the worst probably tattoo I've ever seen in real life. It was unbelievable.
Do you have anything that can compare with that, Leanne?
Not even a little.
Not even a little. Well, I'm curious about you guys. And you said you have a few birds. You have the phoenix and mm-hmm. everything. You got one on your foot. What about you, Chris? Do you have more than one?
No, just the one.
Just the one.
Yeah.
And it's kind of it looks like an abstract symbol. It's a heart with cross lines and dots.
If we hold it like this, it might be easier to
okay.
see. Some people say hockey. I don't like hockey at all, but they're skateboards.
Oh, they're skateboards.
They're
okay.
skateboards, yeah. So there's the one skateboard and the two wheels and then another
okay.
skateboards.
So it's kind of like a love of skating then?
Well, not really, which is but I don't mind that interpretation. It's more, the Jolly Roger is a skull
yeah.
and two crossed swords.
Yeah.
So I was like, yeah, I kind of like that, but I don't like skulls. They don't hold any significance for me. And swords also have no use. So I was just redefine the image, basically.
Okay,
it's like, okay, what do I like? And, you know, I'm a pretty sentimental person and a romantic, so I was like, you know what, I don't care if the heart is a heart. I'll make it a heart. And then the skateboards, obviously. I skateboarded for, 13 years of my life from...
Amateur, professional?
Ninth, no, for fun, but pretty serious about it. I've spent most of my paychecks in college and high school on getting more, new
gear
and stuff. Yeah. And I had this group of friends that I... always hung out with, but we've gone our completely separate ways. I don't see any of them more than once a year, and there's a big group of us, so it's just a reminder.
Okay.
And just
significance time.
Yeah, and so placed it in a way though that it's kind of hidden from most view, and it's upside down to everyone but me.
Mm.
So
polite company. Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. What about you, Leanne? I'm curious about your forearm one, because I can't really read it.
Oh, okay. Well, it's a Sylvia Plath quote.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay,
so
yeah, now I recognize it.
It's from her poem Kindness, and I got that because my grandmother's a poet, and that's where I got my love of poetry, and Sylvia Plath's one of my favorites. So I felt like the blood jet is poetry, that what was passed down from my grandmother to me is never going to stop. And then hopefully I'm going to pass that on down to my kids or grandkids.
There's no stopping it.
So that's that one. And then I have a phoenix on my back. Of course,
the bird imagery.
Rise from the ashes. And then I have a mockingbird on my foot.
Okay. Why the mockingbird?
That's my favorite bird.
Okay.
I feel like that's my totem animal. It just is my spirit
guide. Did you get
guide.
It before or after the Hunger Games hit big?
Before.
Before, good,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah, no.
Okay.
And that was kind of cool, though, when all that was coming out, because I do. I love mockingbirds, and I have a very interesting relationship with them.
Explain.
Well,
you can't just lay that line down and not expect me to go, explain.
I see them everywhere in very strange places that you might not think that you would see a mockingbird.
In my
and
car.
Every time I see one, I tell my husband, look, there's a mockingbird. And it's kind of like the joke that I have a mocking stalker. We were in Lowe's one day, and a mockingbird was in there following us around. I took pictures of him. It was kind of crazy. So that's my favorite bird. And then I have a little Celtic symbol. My sister and I have matching tattoos.
Okay.
And
is that
she
Celtic heritage or anything?
She picked it for her birthday,
okay,
or for her first tattoo, and it was near my birthday. And I said, "Why don't for my birthday I'll get the tattoo, and we'll match and kind of have that connection."
Okay.
So we have that, and then I have another tattoo that's part of the Lexington Tattoo Project. Did you hear anything?
No,
about that?
No, explain. I'm curious.
Okay.
You're familiar with it, Chris?
Yeah.
Okay.
So there's a poet named Bianca Spriggs. I don't know if you know her. She's a pretty big poet in Lexington. And she wrote a love poem, basically, for the city.
Mm-hmm.
And there are two artists there, and they decided to take the words of her poem and kind of lay them into an image and divide those up among, there were 253 participants, I think. So everybody got a small portion of that poem and image tattooed to their body.
Interesting.
So I'm sweating like a pig here. But so mine's here. And they didn't reveal what the image was until the very end. And so they've put it together in, like, a book, and there's a video that goes along with it.
Huh.
Yeah, so it's a poem, a love poem to the city of Lexington that has been tattooed on over 250 people's bodies.
That is like, awesome art idea.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Huh, I wonder if Sakta could do something.
Well, they're doing it in Boulder, Colorado now, too.
Huh.
So, you know, Maybe get with them and you guys could do a Knoxville.
A love poem to Knoxville.
Yeah.
I can see that.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not familiar enough with the city and this isn't my area, you know, but I've traveled through Tennessee quite a bit. Love the state. Memphis, Nashville. I've been to Nash Vegas, as the locals call it, many a time.
People call Lexington Lex Vegas.
Because it's the biggest. Is it the biggest city in Kentucky?
No.
Louisville is?
No, I think it just works better than Louisville, Vegas. But yeah.
There's like
Vegas.
Six ways of pronouncing that city.
Yeah, I don't know.
Louisville, Louisville, Louisville.
How do you pronounce it? What's now for you?
Louisville.
I say Louisville
as well.
Accent thing, maybe.
Yeah.
Because I have that sharp upstate New York accent.
Well, in Kentucky, like, we have. Okay, so we have Louisville.
Mm-hmm.
We have Athens, Boonesboro wrote. It's Athens, but we say Athens. We have Versailles,
mm-hmm.
which is, you know, Versailles. Mm-hmm. What else? What are some other ones?
Well, Georgia's got Albany, New York, but then there's Albany, Louisiana.
Okay.
And I know that my wife had this experience. We went to New York City. We're not in Greenwich Village. And she's like, oh, we're on Houston Street. And all the natives and, you know, New Yorkers looked at her. It's Houston. It's Houston. Don't you ever call it Houston in New York City. That's,
see, I wouldn't have known.
That's a way to prove you're a tourist in New York. It's,
right.
It's Houston.
Huh. Houston.
Now I
don't know why. Just call it Houston. It's like New Orleans. The way you tell if somebody is not native is... if you do the Al Michaels, the sports commentator, because he pronounces it New Orleans.
Oh, yeah.
There's three ways of pronouncing that city. New Orleans, New Orleans, Nolens. And you can do it in French, too. But those are the only four accepted. But if you say New Orleans, you're not
a
native.
You're out.
So I hate it when sportcasters do that. The New Orleans Saints, shut up. Al Michaels. That's awesome. I love that tattoo idea. That's awesome.
It's really cool. They have a Facebook page. They have a blog, so I'll send a link to you so you can check
it out. I'll post it on the Saftacast website so people can check it.
Perfect. Yeah.
Check it out.
It's an amazing idea, and we have, like, to go back to what we were talking about earlier, we have an amazing community of artists and writers, and so, you know, you might think that an idea like that wouldn't be successful in some places. People would think it was weird or... you know, I'm not going to, but no, I mean, it was popular and people were jumping on bandwagon left and right. So,
Awesome. Did you participate, Chris?
I did not. I didn't even hear about it until the people had already, I think, gotten their tattoos.
Mm.
So, No chance to get in on that.
Well, you could just go get one and
I could.
You could copy mine and just say that
what part of poem do you have?
That's the other thing is that the poem was divided into phrases, or sometimes just single words. So when they released the options, like what your choices were, you told them your top three choices, and they tried to be as accommodating as possible.
Yeah.
So I got one of my top choices, and my tattoo says, "They'd have enough." And that, you know, was significant for me. And so most people got something that was... you know, had a significance to them.
I'm sure some people wound up with, they're like, damn it, I got the word Anne.
There were.
Some people wanted that.
Yeah.
I'm sure some did.
And the, and...
Who has the? Do you remember? Someone just has...
I don't remember who. And then some, the poem was a, what's it called? A contrapunctual?
Yeah,
or what's,
contrapuntal.
Yeah. So, like, it's a poem that you can read, I don't
down
know.
Down on one column and then down the other column and then across
and then
the
across.
Line. So it basically reads three ways.
Yeah.
Or you can create a triptych which would read four ways. So you read down, 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 and then across.
Hmm.
So
that's how it's written. And so because of that, there are phrases that are repeated. So one phrase that was really popular and is used a lot is of the universe, which is kind of a neat phrase. So there are a lot of people who have
of the universe
on them.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. I would like to check that out just to see, you know, the whole piece as it's put together. Mm-hmm. How did they get the people for it? Was it just like an open call on Facebook?
Pretty much. They made a invite, and the first, you know, 250-something people that agreed to be part of it got to be part of it. And there was a waiting list, you know, because people were really wanting to get in on the project. And if somebody couldn't or changed their mind or whatever, they had a...
Were the tattoos free, donated by...
They were.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Donated by a local tattoo shop.
There was a local shop that did it, and then they had sponsors that helped cover the cost. But yeah, it was a free tattoo for you.
Neat.
Yeah, kind of cool.
No, it really is a kind of neat idea.
And they have a book that they put together. It's like a coffee table book of all the tattoos, the poem,
they're
people's
in order,
stories.
Aren't they? Are they like so you can read the poem on the bodies?
I think they might be.
I think they are. Mm. I'm not sure though.
That's awesome. Chris, you ever think of getting more?
Or
are you just happy with the one?
I'm satisfied with the one. If something comes up, one of the horrible tattoos that my wife actually liked was a father had tattooed his daughter's artwork on like his side or something. She's like, "Oh, you should do that."
That's,
and I was
that's
like,
sweet.
It's sweet, but his body had done something that my body is probably going to do eventually, which is expand, and it no longer looked quite like his daughter's artwork. Instead, just looked like a bunch of food smeared like across his extended belly. So, you know,
it's not ketchup and barbecue sauce. Yeah. My daughter's sixth grade drawing.
So, you know, if she turns out to be an artist, sure. So I don't know. Yeah, I mean, I always think about the idea, and but I'm in no rush. I think you're in the biggest danger of getting another one within, like, the first year of having one, and so that's over now.
And when you're drunk.
And, yeah.
I've been told. I've been told that. And when you drink, you get more like, I should get another tattoo, but tattoo parlors won't do it while you're drunk.
Right.
Because you're not able to make
smart.
The choice. They're smart about it, yeah. No, I've heard that, and I know the rules, so to speak. And so I know so much about it without having any. It's
right.
Just, you know, that kind of thing. Ever think of anything about your daughter?
When she was first born, I thought about getting her footprint. You know, they stamp their foots when they're born. And then I was like, if they mess up even a little bit, that's no longer my daughter's footprint. So I was like, I'm not going to trust anyone with that.
It's just a wolf print.
Right. It's just some random foot on my body. So, you know.
Play it off with the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and just say that you're part of the Foot Clan, you know.
That's not a bad idea. There that would be a cool, actually...
Just, yeah. You know, BS it then.
Right. It's like,
if they screwed it up.
I'm a junior member because it's a pretty tiny foot.
I got the tattoo.
Right.
You know, I got the tattoo at least. They allowed us.
Yeah. So, well, yeah, not in
not
a rush.
Not a rush.
Yeah.
What about you, Leanne? Looking for new?
Yeah, I would like to get a sleeve done.
Ooh.
And I want to get characters from books that. When I was young, you know, so like Charlotte's Web was a really big book in my childhood. So I would like to get, you know, something from Charlotte's Web, Ferdinand the Bull, and just all those stories that I read, I want to get incorporated in one big sleeve.
That's interesting. What were those stories that you love? Like Ferdinand, okay, and you've got
Charlotte's Web. Wrinkle in Time was one I loved.
Ooh,
Secret
Wrinkle.
Garden. I loved the Secret Garden. I'm trying to think of what else. I did like Little Women, you know, I liked all those kind of.
Classic, standard classics.
Yeah.
What about you, Chris?
Books when I was younger?
Yeah, what books were you into as a kid?
Well, in elementary school, it was all Goosebumps and Animorphs.
R.L. Stine? Yeah, I can't argue with Goosebumps.
Yeah, and then from there, it went straight to Stephen King. So by sixth grade, I read It and The Stand and... Oh, it is amazing.
It's one of the few books of his I love.
Yeah.
It's actually one of the few that actually scared me, too.
Right, oh.
Yeah.
Because I find that most of his books don't scare me.
Yeah.
They're just kind of like, okay. Especially now, as a writer, I can look at it and go, really? You're breaking every rule here. Just because you can. What? Were there any other ones that scared you guys? It is terrifying, but were there other Stephen King ones that scared you? You can think of, like, actual chills from?
Not me, but I don't read. I mean, I didn't read a whole lot of Stephen King or horror in general, really.
I find that horror books don't really scare me. It's yeah. movies that are more effective mm-hmm. in that regard. So I can read some horrific stories, but, you know, fiction. Mm-hmm. Nonfiction can scare the shit out of me,
yeah.
reading
right.
the news.
Yeah.
Like, can we get worse?
Yeah.
Seriously, can it be even worse?
Right.
So other books you loved and such. What were you reading after, you know, like after that level and such? What did you get into?
The Anne Rice vampire.
We all go through a phase like that. Stephen King,
yeah.
Anne Rice,
yeah. Same
phase.
And I love all the jokes. Like, I haven't read Twilight. I kind of want to, just because.
I've read
just
them all.
Just because.
You read them all.
I've read them all.
Why?
Well.
Why? That's
why?
Yeah, right now, I'm going to pull the mic and you'll get the light here and be like, why?
Okay. Well, I read the first one. It was the summer before I went into grad school for secondary education. I was like, oh, all the kids are going to be reading this. I read the first one. I actually kind of liked it. Mm-hmm. I thought she had created an okay character in, what's his name?
Edward?
Yeah. I was like, all right, yeah, it's kind of interesting. And then I was committed. So I read the other three, and they're quick reads. I mean, they might be 600 pages, but you can actually take big chunks of it and just turn it over. Like, it's like 100 pages at a time, and just flip it, and it'll be the same. Like, nothing will have happened in those later books. But, you know, and it actually has paid off in the long run, like, because I work with high school students and can have that conversation with them. Like, they are not prepared for me to argue why, you know, the ending of that book is a terrible, terrible ending. So much so that they did, in fact, change in the movies, although I haven't seen it. But I know they did change it in the movies, because the ending of that book is the worst ending of any book I've ever read.
Why?
The entire fourth book is setting you up for something that in, like, you know, someone who really enjoys fantasy and enjoys competition, which is basically my MO, they're set up for it to be amazing, because all these vampires have special powers, you know, because it's not enough to be a vampire and be a superhuman. You also have to have super, like, special abilities. Like, for instance, one of them can make you a whole group of people imagine they're in a different place than they actually are. So basically, like, the Professor X of the vampire world. And then other ones can completely disable your five senses. And so they all have these crazy abilities. Well, the oldest of the vampires that are coming to destroy the Cullens, because they've had this infernal offspring in a baby vampire child. This is real stuff, all right? Okay.
I'm familiar enough with Twilight to say you can't be making this
up. I'm not making this up. So Edward and Bella had this infernal baby child, and they actually give this back history of
how... Are we spoiling this for you, by the way?
No.
Okay.
No.
So they give the whole book the backstory. You're not allowed to make baby vampires because they're ferocious and they just go around murdering, and they're going to reveal to the whole world that we're, you know... It just can't happen. You can't do it. So they see this as an affront to their old rules, and so they're coming with all their posse of vampire with their super special abilities because they're old and they have all the money, and where the Cullens are American, for one, for the most part. I mean, I don't know. Like, they're definitely Americanized. I don't know what their real history is, but, you know, they're American characters, so they get all the help they get.
Obese vampires, you know.
Right. So, yeah, so they get all the help
ignorant
they can get.
Ignorant of politics, you know.
Opinionated.
Right.
I'm a vampire, and I demand that you listen to me!
Right. And so, in the end, they're, like, on this battlefield, and you're like, alright, awesome, how many of these creatures are gonna die and use their power, and whose is gonna prevail? And it turns out that Bella, all along, her special ability was, like, this trust blanket or something, or like protective blanket that she can like ooze out of her body, so that like all the other side special effects are just like null and void and they can't be used, and you're just like,
that's it.
And then they're like, well, we don't want to fight because we're probably gonna lose, and they just go turn around and go home. Boom, the end.
So
I was like,
her power sounds more like the power of self-doubt.
I mean, maybe.
Guys, I don't really want to fight. I don't think we're going to win this.
Yeah.
You know, I just,
that was the other side. They were
tired.
Afraid.
You know, I'm kind of tired. Why don't we go back to the cemetery? Crippling
self-doubt.
Oh.
That would be an awesome superpower. The power to inflict crippling self-doubt on somebody. Man, I got this great idea for a book and everything. No, you don't.
No.
You're going to fail.
You are garbage.
Dean Koontz is going to make more money in a week than you ever will see in your life from your work.
I know.
Womp
anymore. Stephanie Myers paid me money once.
Oh, man.
Well, it's kind of like you said, you were committed. I am very much, even if I'm reading a book I dislike, I finish the book.
Yeah, I don't know how
movies and stuff, if I don't like a movie, I'll turn it off. But for whatever reason, I commit to a book and a series. So if I read, if I know there are 20 books in a series and I read the first one, I'm reading all the others. Hmm. So I feel like, for me, Twilight's going to be a commitment.
Yeah,
I'm either going to read them all or I'm not going to read them at all.
Mm. Yeah. Just get the audiobook version. That way you can turn them off.
And okay, so 50 Shades of Grey. That's another one.
50 Shades of Shit.
I want to read just because of all the hype. And I'm kind of like, should I? Because if I read the one, then I'm going to end up reading a three, and I'll never get those moments of my life back.
Yeah. How far into a book do you have to get before, like, if you read the first page and you're like, all right. Or is it like, I'm 20 pages in now, or
I have to get a little bit into it. I guess I could just read the
first.
It'd
be a dangerous thing to give you a page of a book that is like, oh no, my brain, I have to finish this.
What happens?
Yeah.
I don't care if it's going to hurt, I gotta get through this.
No, yeah.
I don't know, I have no desire to read that book. None. Yeah. It's just, and I have no desire to see the movie. Yeah. I just kind of wish
movie's coming out next year.
Movie comes out next year. I wish I remembered offhand who the big star was, because some big star was attached to it.
Ian Summer.
I forget. He was attached to it, and then the fan outcry was Charlie Hunnam from Sons of Anarchy was going to play Mr. Grey.
Okay.
And then there was so much backlash from his fans that I think his agent was like, okay, you take this role, you're going to hurt your career, actually, rather than enhance it.
Huh.
So he backed out, and they got some other guy in now.
Interesting.
Wow. And I'm kind of glad for that, because I like Sons of Anarchy. I don't want to see Charlie Hunnam, Jax Teller up there as that, and be like, oh, why? I understand a paycheck, but no! I'm the opposite of you, though. I can watch bad movies, but I can't sit through a bad book.
Yeah.
I'll put it down and be like, screw this. But I'll sit through a bad movie. I don't care. I'm looking for that one good thing, because every bad movie has a glimmer of something good.
See, I guess I feel that way about books. There's got to be at least one redeeming passage or sentence or something, you know, that I'm going to take away from this book that's going to strengthen me in some way and make me a better writer or a better person.
Yeah.
Do you get that sense from Twilight, Chris? Are you a better person because you can ooze trust?
Having read
no.
It makes you more effective in the working
with
high
scores. It does, but you know, if I'm thinking about it from, I mean, I don't know. I do think she somehow created a pretty intriguing character intention in Edward, but it could have ended after the first book. Definitely, three more was a bit of a stretch.
Yeah, maybe a second book just to follow. Do you need a quadrilogy?
Yeah.
Quadology? Whatever the word is.
You didn't. She didn't.
Well, I know that what kicked me off about her is that she was like, I never wrote vampire stuff before. And then the internet detectives of the world found out, no, you wrote Buffy fanfiction, actually. Here's the proof.
Oh, wow.
So she deceives
us. Busted.
She wrote Buffy fanfiction. And, you know, it's no secret that 50 Shades is a fan fiction of Twilight.
Right.
That just, they changed the names because she couldn't get the copyright. So how does a book like 50 Shades even get that big?
I don't know.
Sex.
Fair enough.
Yeah, but there's lots of books with sex, right?
It's disguised sex. Like, women can put it in their handbags and read it, and, you know, or they can put it on their... This is truth. There was a huge surge in erotic fiction, thanks to ebooks and Kindles, because you could look at it on the Kindle and nobody would know that you were reading a Harlequin romance.
Mm.
You could disguise it.
That's a great idea.
I feel like if you're going to read it, just own it. Own it.
Just stand out
there. Roll up at the PTA meeting
with a hustler in your hands. Well, I'm reading Penthouse Forum. What? I never thought this would happen to me.
It's still reading. Reading is reading.
Reading is reading. Do you guys think that we read more or less now as people? Not us as writers, but just people in general. Do we read more or less nowadays?
I think people read more.
Yes, not, depends on your definition, I guess, of reading. We definitely consume more text,
yeah.
I feel like,
yeah.
But the actual critical level of reading, probably, as a people, less.
You're not going to find many people walking around with copies of Baudelaire.
Well,
yeah.
Sure. Or, I mean, even just like that, you know, as a reader, you're going to be, you will know the state I'm talking about, where you kind of hit a meta reading, where you know you're reading and you're taking this in, but you're also processing as someone who's read a lot, like, future events that could happen, and you're ruling things out, and you're constructing these characters, and you're looking at the scenery, and you're building the scenery in your head, and, like, over the course of a novel, you know, all those tiny calculations that add up overall to a pleasing experience while reading, I think happens less. But actual consumption of text happens more, if that makes sense.
That was the smart answer.
That was a smart answer. You're gonna give the not smart answer?
No, my answer was yes. I think we read more.
yes, we do. Next question, please.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I think about it a lot because of, you know, high school students. It's
what do you do? You keep mentioning it. What do you do? Are you a teacher?
I'm a high school English teacher. Yeah.
Okay,
teach 173 students this year and how to read and write better, and speak better and listen better. So, yeah, so I think a lot about that because, you know, there's all this things like, well, students are reading a lot more, you know, they're always on their phones, they're always texting and writing. I'm like, yeah, but at the same time, you're talking about two different set of skills. Like, they don't need to, for college, spontaneously respond like, no, you suck in a text message. Like, yeah, they read and wrote that, but that's not the same as like, oh, you have to argue why you actually need to go to the bathroom because you only have 4 hall passes and you use your 4 hall passes already in the first 4 days of school, and you can't even construct an argument for why it's like perfectly valid for you to ask for another one. You know, that's a problem, and that's because they're not actually doing the same level of reading,
critical thinking about
it. Critical thinking that actually needs to take place.
This is why on Facebook, then your Facebook feed is flooded with, check out this article!
Right.
But there's no critical discussion of, you do realize there's a flaw with that article,
right.
And here's it. And then if you do, you risk becoming that asshole
right.
on the feed. Like, I don't want to be the asshole, but actually, this fact is not true. And then your friends are like, they jump in with a, well, blah, 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 and then it starts to rabble over it.
Yeah. Yep.
So. You teach?
I teach at college.
What do you teach?
English. Of course.
Okay.
So I get them right after you, basically.
They're not mine, I swear.
No, they're not. Obviously, you know, 1,500 miles away. I'm not going to get the same students. Maybe the same caliber, maybe.
Yeah, probably.
But, no, they don't have critical thinking skills. I'm sorry to say it. And it bothers me. So I design all my courses not about writing, but about critical thinking.
Yeah,
writing, I tell them up front, day one, in my comp classes, you are not here to learn how to write. It is not my job to teach you how to write. By now you know how to write. My job is to teach you how to communicate, to go to the next level,
right.
And be able to be that asshole on Facebook and go, actually, the Benghazi situation, here's a great source of information, you know, from the Washington Post that can give you more information about that issue. Ha!
Mm-hmm.
And be that asshole.
Mm-hmm.
Teach them the logical fallacies, you know. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's the no true Scotsman argument. Why are you giving me this bullshit, Mr. Candidate?
Mm-hmm.
So what do you do, Leanne? Are you a teacher?
I stay at home. I have 3 boys, so I stay at home.
That makes sense. And one of them is a terror. One of them is
the
bully.
They're all their own little terrors.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, 3 boys, so it's busy. Busy in our house.
That, just one. Just one, my family.
Yeah.
That's always needed. Always needed.
One is like 2 is like 5 and 3 is like 10. It's like,
oh,
like having 10 people.
Plus
that's,
the animals.
That's a, you know, real mathematical formula. You can Google it.
I'm going to ask my math professor friend.
So is it true that one kid is like 2, 2 is 5, and 3 is 10?
And you have a daughter, Chris?
I do, yeah. She's 3.
A 3-year-old, mm-hmm. Aw. How old are your sons? I think you said earlier, but
just turned 11, almost 9, and then I have a 5-year-old.
Okay, so
yeah.
Do the 3-year-old and 5-year-old ever get together and hang out?
No,
we haven't yet.
Not yet.
No. We should. Although you might not want her hanging around with mine.
No,
you know
he's the terror.
He's
the terror.
A bruiser. He's
a bruiser.
He's got a lot of energy, no fear, which is you know, as a parent, that scares the crap out of you when your kid has no fear.
Yeah.
He's the one who will be balance beam walking across the stair rail if I'm not careful. You know, you're getting ready to fall to your death. And he's like, meh, it's fun.
So train your daughter in martial arts now, Chris. So then they'll hang out and they'll play, you know, oh, you got to bruise me here. Wacha!
Yeah.
Knock you out. You know?
She's well versed in the art of the
of the kill
and the kill. Yeah,
hunters.
We do body slams almost daily.
Okay,
nice.
part of growing up.
Well, you know, you're in Kentucky, Tennessee, very popular space for pro wrestling. Get her involved in the women's leagues as she gets older and everything.
Backyard wrestling.
Yeah,
backyard extreme wrestling.
That's the one with the tacks and stuff where they
hardcore.
Backyard's
even more insane because they don't have any safety equipment. They don't have doctors backstage to start pulling the tacks out and, you know, put the salve on to help close the wounds. Like in boxing, you see the doctor come over for a cut and they put this like gelatin Vaseline over the eye to hold it shut for a bit.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have that in the backyard.
No.
You have a water hose.
You have a water hose.
Spray it off. Keep going.
Yep. That's the way it works.
Pool. Yeah.
That's the way it works. So is your 3-year-old an adventurer?
Yeah. She's adventurous. She's, because she's an only child right now, she's learned how to kind of like, oh, well, you're cooking and you're doing work. I'm going to go over here and create a huge tower and then jump from the top of this indoor slide thing that we have to knock it down and then be like, oh, my foot hurts. Like,
she knows how to get attention.
She does. She does. She knows how to get attention. She's learning. She likes gymnastics, so we go and take her there. She's
Well, you got to start them young in gymnastics.
Yeah.
Yeah, starting to well, they're still flexible and malleable.
Yeah.
Right. They're like aluminum foil.
Yeah.
As children. You know? My mother's gonna probably listen to this and go, what are you talking about? It's not treating you like aluminum foil. So it's our time, like, oh, we got a couple more minutes and everything. So while in the time we've got left here, because I know we got a reading this afternoon you guys are doing here.
I'm excited
about that. At the Birdhouse, nonetheless.
Perfect.
I know.
Perfect.
That's awesome.
It'll be my first time as well there, so
oh,
looking
cool.
forward to it. You guys know what you're going to read? Still
yeah,
deciding?
Yeah, I think I know what I'm going to read.
Yeah, I'm going to read from a book, my book. And
I'm just going to read from a book. I'm just going
to read the phone book.
I might pick one up from this bookshelf, and then
I'm just going to read from the Bible, you know.
Yeah.
Whatever.
It'll be good.
Okay. Cool. So I'm looking forward to that and everything. It's awesome to have you guys here. So how can folks find you on the internet? Or, you know, let's talk about, like, real quick here, promo stuff. Any upcoming publications for you guys? Any books coming up?
Well, I have a press. It's called Two of Cups Press.
Oh, yes. We didn't even get the chance to talk about that. Oh,
well, and we're getting ready to put out some chapbooks. We just closed up our inaugural chapbook competition.
Woot!
So here in the next few months, you can look for new titles that will be released.
So where can the folks find you online at that?
Well, I've got, it's twoofcupspress.com.
Okay.
And then I have a personal website, which is leannehornfeld.com, I think. I don't even know if that's right.
So if you go to it, it might not be updated right now.
Yeah,
so.
But, you know, and a Facebook presence for both me and the press. So that's
are you on Twitter
way.
At all?
The press has a Twitter, which I don't keep up with. I should. Okay. But I don't keep up with it.
Chris, how can the folks at home find you out there?
Because
they want to know more about you and
your
work. And
yeah, well, there's not really a web space for me that's presentable yet, my own work. But, you know, if they want to know about what I'm work on a lot of the time, that's not my own writing, it's Accents Publishing. So I'm the junior editor there, and they can go to that website, accentspublishing.com, and see a lot of our work. Yeah, and cool. Facebook and Twitter.
Okay. What's your Twitter handle?
At Accents Publishing, pretty much.
Okay.
Yeah,
at
I mean,
Publishing.
That's the one that I am active on. And then, you know, Facebook is just Chris McCurry.
Speaking of Twitter here, I'm just going to grab a shot of us to prove that we were doing this live at the farmhouse here.
Can you get us both?
There we go. There we go. We're going to do what the kids, I guess, call a selfie.
Okay.
We'll do something that the kids call a selfie here, and we'll even bring the mic. Folks, we are proving that, yes, this is an actual Sapphicast recording there. I'll send that up on our Twitter feed today. Guys, it has been a joy having you here. It has been great meeting you. I guess got to meet you last night. It was great. And enjoy your stay here at the farm. I know afterwards we're going to have a grand old shindig afterwards, after the reading and everything.
We have to head home.
Blasphemy!
I know.
Oh my
blasphemy.
Gosh. Yeah.
Oh, blasphemy. Yeah. But then come back.
Yeah.
Come back in a couple months or something. Schedule another reading, come back, and we will do the wing dang doodle one more time.
Awesome.
Awesome. Thank you guys so much for being here.
Thank you. Thanks.
All right. We'll just
look at this. I have like sweated.
Oh my god.
Were you that nervous?
Through my shirt. I don't know what the deal is.
How long? Do you know how long we're supposed to read?
No idea.
It's a 2-hour event.
2-hour event?
I think it says 3 to 5.
The SAFTAcast is a production of the Sundress Academy for the Arts. For episodes and more, visit SAFTAcast.com. Until we talk again, this is your host, Scott C., signing off.